Would you please stand for our sermon reading today? Our sermon reading today comes from Exodus chapter 17, beginning at verse 8. Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some men for us and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, so his hands were steady until the sun set. And Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this as a reminder in a book and recite it in the hearing of Joshua. I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called it, "The Lord is my banner." He set a hand upon the banner of the Lord. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Good morning again and welcome again to worship today. Today we're continuing a new sermon series we started last week entitled, if I can get it up here, Forgotten Tales of the OT. OT, of course, is short for Old Testament. And so what we're doing in this series is looking at some of those lesser known, some of those forgotten stories of the Old Testament. These are stories that if you were, you know, trying to maybe do a sermon series on the book of Genesis or the book of Exodus, and you were trying to narrow it down to 10, 15, 20 stories, these stories, they maybe wouldn't make the cut. And yet, just because they're lesser known doesn't mean that they contain any less biblical truth that we can learn from. Last week, we were in the book of Genesis, looking at the story of God cutting a covenant with Abraham, and this week we're in the book of Exodus. One of the themes that we're looking at today in our story is the significance, the importance of some of the tools, some of the instruments that we rely on in our lives. And so let me have you think about this question. What are some of the tools, what are some of the instruments that you often maybe find holding in your hands? What are those tools, and what are those tools tell us about you, about who you are, right? Maybe there's a certain fishing rod or a rifle that you love and you're often using it. Maybe you have a certain go-to golf club that you really rely on. Maybe you're someone who always has a paintbrush in their hand or a sewing needle or a hammer or a chainsaw. A couple years ago, I got a meat thermometer for when I grill. And that thermometer is like one of my most used tools. Just gotta have, when I grill, give me any tool for anything else, but I gotta have my meat thermometer to grill that meat just perfectly. Or last example here, you know, when kids are young, they often attach themselves to a certain blanket, to a certain stuffed animal. They take everywhere. Well, when our daughter Adele was younger, she had a shovel like that. As you can see, she took that shovel everywhere she went. Right, the tools, the instruments that we rely on in life, they're significant and they reveal a lot about who we are. And I share this with you today because we also find this to be true in our story from Exodus 17 that centers around Moses. Let me set the context of this story for us today. The Israelites have just left Egypt after being slaves there for 400 years. They just crossed the Red Sea and escaped the Egyptians in chapter 14. And now they're on their way to the Promised Land. And they have so much to look forward to with their new freedom. But what's also new for them is God. Throughout their time, these 400 years as slaves in Egypt, they have forgotten more and more over the years who their God is, the God of their ancestors. But now God has come barreling into their lives to save them through plagues and pillars of cloud and fire and the parting of seas. And as they're beginning their journey to the Promised Land, God begins to show them what it will mean to have him as their God. And one of the things that God tries to teach them early on is that they need to learn to put their faith in God and rely on Him for all they need, even in the everyday, ordinary things. And so if you remember, one of the first stories after the Exodus is the story of manna and quail. Pretty early on, as the people are traveling in the wilderness, they run out of food. And so they complain and say this, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." And so this food crisis becomes a faith crisis. Yes, they saw God save them through these miraculous displays of power, but they really don't trust God yet. And so God provides for them with quail that comes down from the sky, and also manna, which comes in the morning like this flaky bread-like substance that appears in the ground. And then the next story in Exodus is similar. Now they find themselves without water, and they again complain to Moses. And God commands Moses to use his staff to strike a rock, which water then gushes out from. And then we get to our passage today. And this is how it begins in Exodus 17, verse 8. It says, "Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim." In other words, the Israelites are attacked by the Amalekites. And we don't know why exactly. Maybe they feel threatened by this large host passing them by. Maybe it's a dispute over water rights since they found this new source of water. What's interesting, later in Deuteronomy, this incident is mentioned, and we get some more hints about what's going on. It says this, "Remember what Amalek did to you on your journey out of Egypt, how he attacked you on the way when you were faint and weary, and struck down all who lagged behind you. He did not fear God." Right, so it seems that the Amalekites, they saw an opportunity when the Israelites were weak and attacked them from behind. Not only that, but they attacked the most vulnerable, maybe the sick, the injured, the elderly, the young, who were lagging behind in the journey. It's the image of almost another oppressor like Pharaoh who has come to attack them and take advantage of them. And so the people are again in need. Not of food this time, not of water, but of safety, of protection. And so look at what Moses does in verse 9. It says, Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some men for us and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Right? So Moses, he does two things. He has Joshua choose some men and go and fight against Amalek, while he plans to take the staff of God to the top of the hill overlooking the battle. And then look at what happens during the battle in verse 11. "Whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side, one on the other side. So his hands were steady until the sun set. And Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the sword." Right, notice this is not really your typical epic battle from the Bible. This is not David and Goliath or mighty Samson slaying 1,000 men with a donkey's jawbone. In fact, very little is said about the battle itself. And actually, I think this last verse, verse 13, is kind of misleading. Again, it says, "Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the sword." But if you look at the story again, we know that that's not really where the real action took place. This battle was not won by the sword down in the valley, but by the staff, right up on top of the hill, the staff in Moses' hands. This is the tool, this is the instrument that Moses relied upon. And remember what Moses called this staff, the staff of God. And that tells you that victory, it's not even so much found in the staff, but in whose power is working in the staff, right? This battle is won by God. In fact, at the end of this story, verse 15 said this, "And Moses built an altar and called it, 'The Lord is my banner.'" Right? Think of a war banner, a medieval war banner, right? In battle, your banner was often positioned near the king, near the commander. And so not only does the banner declare who your leader is, where your leader is, but it's also the rallying point. You rally to your banner where you can find guidance and protection and victory. And Moses says, "The Lord is my banner. I rally to him to find victory." He is where victory is found, not by running off on my own to fight, but by running to God. And that's why Moses goes up on that hill with the staff of God. He's going up to call upon God's strength and power to win this battle. And he takes the staff with him because it's a representation and even an instrument of God's power. Right? It's the same staff that Moses used to turn the Nile River to blood and to part the Red Sea. And the same staff he just used in the previous story to strike the rock so that water could come out. But the essential element in the story, it's not just the staff, it's also about Moses' hands, right? His hands are mentioned 6 times. Again, verse 11 said, whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed, and whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. Right? We assume he's holding the staff in his hands. This is what Joshua told him to do. But again, what Moses is really doing through his actions and probably his words is he's calling out to God in prayer. Right? Same as putting your hand on someone who is sick and praying for healing for them. You're asking for God's healing power to come through you, the one who's praying, onto that person you're praying for. And this is what Moses is doing as he raises up his hands and his staff. He's praying for God's strength to come upon their warriors in battle. And for whatever reason, Israel only prevails when those hands are raised. And you get almost a comical scene that happens, right? Moses gets tired. He's been doing it all day. His legs grow weary of standing, and he's struggling to keep his hands raised. And so Aaron, his brother, and this guy named Hur, they grab a rock for him to sit on, and they stand on either side of him and just hold his hands in the air all day until the sun sets. And this is how they win the battle. And there's such a contrast in strength here. Here's God, all-powerful. He's parted the sea, made manna and quail appear, brought water from rocks, now brings victory and strength to this battle for Israel. And all Moses has to do is hold up his hands, hold his staff in the air. And he can't, right? He's too weak. He's too tired. He's too human. Now, Moses' physical strength may be weak in this story, but his faith is not. From the beginning, he knows how this battle will be won. And so he does the most important thing of anyone. He puts all his faith in God, relies fully on him. Yes, he sends his warriors out to fight, but he knows they can't win this battle on their own. He knows this battle will only be won with God's strength, not the strength of his warriors. He's confident not in the sword, but in the staff of God, which is God's strength. And this theme of relying on God's strength over our own strength is found all over the Bible. Let me give you a few examples. Isaiah 41 says this, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my victorious right hand." Or listen to Paul's words in 2 Corinthians. "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ, for whenever I am weak, then I am strong." And then one more here. Moses says this to the people right after parting the Red Sea. "But Moses said to the people, 'Do not be afraid, stand firm, see the deliverance that the Lord will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You have only to keep still.'" Right? The strength we need does not come from ourselves. It comes from God. But notice, God, he does not call us to inactivity. Right? It's not let go and let God. It's interesting, there's really two struggles taking place in the story. Two battles, in a sense. The one in the valley with the armies, and then the one on the hill with Moses. And what's taking place on the hill is more important than the one going on in the valley. I mean, after all, that's where the whole passage focuses on. Moses has fully put his trust in God. He fully relies on God, but he's not inactive, right? This is not passive dependency on God. It's an active dependency. It's a struggling, it's a wrestling, and a battling to continue to persist in raising that staff and calling out to God and praying and asking God again and again for God's strength in this battle. Asking again and again for God to bring victory. And this is a lesson that God's teaching the Israelites, if they're going to make it through this, through the wilderness, into the promised land, and through all the struggles, hardships, battles, it's not going to happen through their own strength. It's only going to happen through their active dependency on God's strength. And here's what we have to realize today. We, in many ways, are like the Israelites wandering in the wilderness. Right? As a church, God has us on our own journey to a kind of promised land. We're on a journey towards the mission, towards the calling God has for us as a church. And I believe God wants to do great things for his kingdom through our church. He wants to change lives. He wants to bring healing, transform our community, bring near the lost. And he wants to do that through us, but it's not going to come through our strength. It's only going to come through God's strength. And it's going to come through our active pursuit and dependency on God's strength. We need to call upon God and ask for his strength in whatever endeavor we undertake. And this is true in our personal lives as well. Right? We all face our own battles throughout life. And in these times, we find ourselves... Oftentimes we're down, we're like down in the valley, swinging our sword, right? Trying to overcome addiction, trying to beat cancer, trying to keep our marriages alive, trying to raise our kids, trying to keep going in the midst of days filled with anxiety or depression. We all have battles, and we need to keep fighting. But at some point, we have to realize that you cannot do this by your own strength. Doesn't matter how hard you work, how long you work, how many new things you try, how many experts you consult, you cannot win the battle by your own strength. Victory is only going to happen by God's strength. Only God can do it. And so the best thing you can do, the most important thing you can do is ask for it. Call upon God, ask for him again and again to work in your life. I mean, essentially what we're talking about here is your prayer life. But here's the thing, and I've experienced this, prayer and dependency on God is a lot like the struggles that Moses experienced on that hilltop, right? It's hard. It's tiring. It's like raising a staff above your head all day. It doesn't happen with a snap of a finger. And that's frustrating, and it can lead to disappointment. It can lead to impatience. And so like Moses, you have to persist and press on with mental and physical energy and exertion. Keep asking God again and again and depend on his strength again and again. If you look at this story, particularly these three characters, Moses and Aaron and Hur, it's a beautiful picture of what the church can be. Right here Moses is, he's raising up his staff, he's calling out for God's strength, and he's struggling, but Aaron and Hur are there to support him, to help him, to do it with him, to lend their strength to his strength towards a common cause. Look again at verse 13. Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side, the other on the other side, so his hands were steady until the sun set. And I love that, right? They steadied his hands. What a beautiful image of actively seeking God's strength together. This is what we're called to as a church, to seek God's strength together. And so let me ask you this. Do you have someone in your life or people in your life who can steady your hands? When your faith is wavering and you're beginning to rely too much on yourself, do you have someone in your life who will come alongside you and steady your hands and point you back to God, point you back to prayer, pray with you, remind you that victory is only found in God? And here's another question to think about. Whose hands can you steady? Is there someone in your life who you can be an Aaron to, a her to? Who in your life needs to be reminded that in the midst of our battles, victory is only found in calling out to God? And so here's my challenge, here's my encouragement for us today. How can we as a church, how can we as individuals rely less on the sword and more on the staff of God? How can we rely less on our strengths and our gifts, our resources, and more on God's strength? And I realize this is so hard. Right, as human beings, we're so geared towards self-reliance. We're so used to achieving goals and solving problems and finding solutions through our own power. But that doesn't work in God's kingdom. And so how can you grow in your prayer dependency? How can we do it together? We need each other for this. And so like Moses and Aaron and Hur, may we seek to support and lift each other up as we pursue God's strength together.